and that we should continue to admit and was an apology from Honorable Nesso and Honorable Lewis and Honorable Kanin Juwata and Honorable Kapim will be taking it to the meeting.
Okay, those are the apologies you have received. Are there other apologies? That's one. Thank you very much. Honorable Deputy Minister, you can introduce, and I'm not sure whether the DG will present, but let me hand over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to members and members of the public, members of the media. Thanks for the invitation, Chairperson, to the portfolio committee. I am with me this morning, a team from the Department of Public Service and Administration. I have the DG, Professor Levine. I have the director responsible for the program that we'll be presenting, Zamabuhle Mzwayo. I have the advisor, Minister's advisor, Temba Langa, and head of the staff in the Minister's office, Kim Kusumezi, and from our communications office, Mother Court. This morning we'll be presenting the Graduate Recruitment Scheme, which is a scheme that has been established to support the President's Yes Initiative. I'm sure we all remember that the President announced the Yes Initiative that's about youth empowerment service. That's a potentially really trying to address the problem of unemployment, both in public service and private sector. And there have been targets that are supposed to be met within a year to try and eradicate the challenge of unemployment among youth. And more specifically, this program is actually focusing on unemployed graduates. And the framework actually responds to the plight of unemployed graduates who have mostly, because they have skills already, found it difficult to actually manage into public service because of lack of experience. The President has made a call for removal of barriers to entry, which was what was an impediment for youth to come into public service, taking into consideration the high level of vacancy rate within public service. Basically, what will happen is that the program will be run across the board in government departments. The document talks to that, and the DG will be presenting about this in detail to actually take us through the entire process as to how this is actually going to be rolled out. I thank you, Chairperson. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Honourable Deputy Minister. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, and all members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity of presenting the work we've done on the graduate recruitment scheme framework, as well as developmental programs. As the outline indicates, we will first talk to the problem statement. We're then going to look at the implementation context. Then we'll look at the various factors which influence the graduate recruitment scheme framework, the key principles and objectives. We'll give an overview of the scheme, exactly what it is. We'll do some definitions around various initiatives that have been put in place, which will include learnership programs, apprenticeships, etc., to understand how this fits in or adds additional value, which we believe it does. We're going to look at the issue of funding and budgeting. We're going to look at recruitment remuneration and duration, monitoring evaluation, and you'll be able to show the kind of investments that departments who have joined in as of now are making in this scheme and its approach. And we'll end with a few challenges and issues around resources. The problem statement really is one that we're all familiar with. There's firstly the issue of skills shortages across the public sector. And there's also the overarching challenge we have of a disproportionately high rate of youth unemployment in the country. And the NDP talks to these issues, and it also talks about the fact that various interventions are fragmented, they could be better coordinated and they're inadequately reported on. So we will try and give some information about the situation or the context which the NDP was getting by looking at data from the pre-graduate recruitment scheme period. So the NDP explicitly recommends the introduction of a formal recruitment scheme, which is focusing on addressing challenges faced in implementation rather than high-level policy formulation or analysis. We actually need to put something in place which can change the playing field, as it were, to the maximum extent possible. And it also says that what we introduce should coexist with other recruitment routes, and it really focuses on the issue of strengthening the talent pipeline for the public services future capacity. And it talks about a central coordination mechanism. And the outcome was really to ensure that the public service has a well-defined, transparent, and shared strategy for recruiting dedicated young people, ensuring that their skills are developed, and that they get clear career progression once they're brought in order to ensure retention. So if we look at the data, which we have in four financial years, prior to the current year we are in now, so 14-15 to 17-18, we see on slide number 6, we see the graph there, which gives us an indication of the numbers involved in various initiatives and programs on an annual basis. And it fluctuates between roughly 30,000 and 45,000. And on slide 7, we give a more detailed breakdown per province, as well as nationally. And we talk to particular programs. Well, we talk to NARISEC in particular as an intervention. And then we look at the total number of people involved over the period, which is around 150,000. And then on slide 8, what's important on that slide is to compare the placements with the retention. And one can obviously look at those detailed numbers per sector, well, it is a sectoral breakdown, so one could look at them per sector and make certain sectoral observations, which would say, for example, that in health, the retention has been better than in other sectors. But the fact of the matter at the end of the day is that when we look at the entire period, we see that of around 79,000 placements, we've managed to retain around 3,600 in the public service. So clearly a different kind of intervention is required from the perspective of retention. So what we do then is we talk about some of the factors which would obviously include this challenge of retention on slide 9. And we talk about the factors which influence the design of the scheme. So the increase of the duration of the scheme to align with typical periods required for appointments into permanent positions, increasing the chances of retention, expanding the scope to include artisan development programs, graduate recruitment schemes of various sorts, cadet programs, looking at the conditions of service of those who participate in developmental programs, and giving effect to the objectives to turn the public sector into a training space. So every public sector institution, as has been said, should be a public sector training space. And obviously work integrated learning opportunities from the Tibet colleges system would be very important. But the real issue of skills development and application of knowledge in the workplace becomes critical in terms of the kind of programs that are offered to people in the public service, either young people in terms of developmental programs, or those who are even in and need to deepen their skills. So some of the key principles on slide 10, which inform the development and the implementation of the scheme, really at the high level is building the capacity of the state, at the skills level, specialist professional skills, technical skills, the link to demand for attention capacity based on a real empirical assessment in terms of the demand, supply, and the ability to forecast and to foresight the kind of skills, which becomes very important in the context of the fourth industrial revolution, obviously, because with the precise skills required and their application is changing very rapidly, as we know, and Parliament is focusing on these matters as we speak. We want to also look at less legal implications. We don't want to amend legislation. We may want to issue directives or determinations within the existing laws. And really, the overarching need to respond to the developmental agenda of the country of reducing unemployment, fighting poverty, reducing inequality, and improving service delivery. So if we look very briefly then on slide 11 at the overview of the development of the graduate recruitment scheme framework, we see that there were three options which formed part of the feasibility study. The first one, the coordination of departmental schemes. The second one is centralized recruitment with decentralized selection. And thirdly, a central graduate recruitment scheme. A number of consultations were held within the governance and administration cluster, where we have the heads of human resource management components and DGs deliberating over the matter. There were a number of consultations focusing specifically on the options held at national and provincial departments over a period of roughly a year between April 2015 and February 2016. And then really the approach was to have a framework approach which focused on creating an enabling environment with minimum norms, enhanced coordination, and autonomy and accountability of departments. And this was taken through the cabinet system. It was launched by the minister. It has been issued to departments, and we are moving into an implementation phase at the latter end of the 2018-19 financial year, and we will look at the investment made by departments later on in the presentation. So basically, the public service developmental programs and the graduate recruitment scheme framework coexist, and they contribute towards other programs. These are listed, such as the Youth Employment Accord, the Decade for Artisan, run by the Department of Higher Education and Training, the Youth Employment Service that has been mentioned by the Deputy Minister in a preambular statement, and then the National Youth Development Strategic Framework, and the National Rural Youth Service Corps, which is coordinated by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. The fact is, though, if we look at the national picture, the public service programs do deliver the single largest number in contribution to the national figures for youth development as coordinated by the Department of Higher Education and Training. It does show that there is a focus within the public service, there is coordination, and there is continuous improvement. So the strategic objectives of the program on slide 13 is to promote investments in strengthening departments' talent pipelines, to encourage the contribution of public service departments to the youth developmental agenda, to obviously bring to effect the objectives of the Skill Development Act and the National Skills Development Strategy, and to use the workplace as an active learning environment, to provide opportunities for new entrants to the labour market, to employ persons who find it difficult to be employed. It is encouraging workers to participate in learnership and other training programs, and to improve the employment prospects of persons previously disadvantaged by unfair discrimination, and to redress those disadvantages through focused training and education. So on slide 14, these are spelled out as objectives: to provide a well-defined, transparent, and shared approach with minimum norms, strengthening the talent pipeline, providing best practice on existing schemes, and enhancing the image and competitiveness of public employment in the labour market to improve professionalism in the public service. On page 15, we define a graduate as a person who has successfully completed a course of study or training, especially a person who's been awarded an undergraduate or first academic degree or diploma which is registered in terms of the MQF framework. And other considerations are the development pathway to an occupation is not always linear, it can follow different routes, and the unique position where the public service has no option but to ensure the maintenance of qualified and experienced personnel in its ranks at all times. On slide 16, we look at various other categories and definitions of what's already in place. Graduate internship, that's someone who has completed a qualification and is unemployed but requires workplace experience to enhance employment opportunities. Internship programs, which is workplace or practical experience required in addition to general theoretical knowledge based on qualifications. Pre-service training, work integrated learning, that's someone who is currently studying towards a higher education qualification and must undertake a period of work experience to require the fulfillment of the qualification. Candidacy development support programs are internships linked to professional development, which are required for professional registration with professional bodies or councils. Learnership programs are structured learning programs combining theoretical and practical work experience, leading to a qualification which is registered in the MQF. And a learner, a person employed in the public service in terms of a learnership agreement, or an unemployed youth who does not have any work experience in the field which he or she is studying. An apprenticeship is a learning program in respect of an officially listed trade. It would include a trade test related to the trade. And a structured youth development program, a developmental program for youth who have completed school leaving certificate seeking to be exposed to a workplace to be equipped with the skills, attitudes, competencies, and values needed to pursue a career in the public service or elsewhere. There are contextual considerations which are discussed on slide number 17. And this really firstly refers to the mechanism to effectively deliver any of the graduate institutional framework options would depend on the creation of a centrally operated agency. And the context we obviously exist in the public service is decentralized human resource management, which would obviously include recruitment and selection. also then the constrained economic position the public service finds itself in renders it unaffordable to pursue a centrally operated scheme. It would obviously, any approach would need to be within the DPSA mandate for determining norms and standards. And hence, the graduate recruitment scheme is a program to recruit and train graduates for specific roles, or a program to recruit and train graduates for a broader developmental program with assignment to specific roles on completion. Slide 18 gives a diagrammatic depiction of integrated talent development and the management strategy to support the scheme. It looks at the roles and responsibilities of top management, human resource management in departments around recruitment, and then breaking it down into planning as well as the development of the talent. So planning around what is required within a particular department against the skills requirements, as well as career planning, talent management, on the side of top management decisions on career planning, talent development, and recruitment strategy options. And there is then the whole issue of quota allocation on the vacancy rate within related occupations. And it is important that ultimately we do seriously consider quotas, if you like, or targets, which we've done, and the committee is aware of the travails of the public service to meet the various targets that have been set at the level of gender and disability. But serious consideration is needed to be given to putting in targets specifically for the recruitment of youth. Slide 19 looks at the attempts which we need to ensure around capacity development programs and how to integrate them around the scheme. And really the points of integration are capacity for technical skills, the creation of employment, and investing in the development of talent pipeline for current and future skills. So we have the scheme as a framework. We also have issued a directive or a circular on the waiver of minimum work experience for appointment into entry-level posts in the public service. So we've tried to put down the barriers which exist for youth coming into the public service and fast-tracking their development. And we also have a directive on the appointment of persons into developmental programs in the public service. The next three slides are again diagrammatical depictions of the process for implementing and the routes to the graduate recruitment scheme. So it looks at recruitment, selection, and placement, the minimum generic elements of graduate recruitment scheme, and it looks at different departments and what they would need to put together in order to respond to the scheme. So it would be around issues of bursaries and internship. It would also be about learnerships, apprenticeships, and how these would coalesce with and become integrated with the graduate recruitment scheme. The slide on 21 gives an example of a departmental skills pipeline intervention strategy. It looks at schools program, the solid foundations, the attraction of learners to the Bolton Property Centre, etc., and focusing on public works, the promotion of that department as an employer of choice. It looks at the bursary scheme and programs and how that would support financially candidates through structured academic programs, as well as technical internship and young professional programs, which would be aimed at professional development and structuring mentorship around critical skills. The professional pipeline is trying to take us through from school to higher education to candidacy to registered experience, expert, so it's the entire kind of career pathway. It talks about the roles of basic education, professional formation, professional practice, and it looks at the whole issue of career progression, retention, mentorship capacity, and so on. If we look at the funding, because obviously the funding is a critical element of this, heads of departments, that's on slide 23, heads of departments must ensure the availability of sufficient funds to implement the graduate recruitment scheme and associated costs. and where a national department initiates and leads a graduate recruitment scheme, targeting sectorial occupational categories, budgetary arrangements must be made in consultation with each of the effective executive authorities prior to the implementation of the scheme. Where possible and appropriate, departments must utilize the skills levy from a sectoral Education and Training Authority or donor funds to establish and operate a graduate recruitment scheme, and the duration shall not exceed 48 months. It would include training, orientation, assistance with preparation for professional registration, to a point where candidates meet the minimum requirements to be appointed to the entry-level position in terms of the occupation involved. It gives the budgeting considerations, which departments would need to look into, and they would need to take into account monthly stipends or allowances, targeted training for candidates offered by the National School of Government and other institutions, personal and or further developmental programs, reasonable accommodation as regulated in the determination on reasonable accommodation and assistive devices for employees with disabilities in the public service, pre-employment verification as prescribed in the public service regulations, the possible extension of contracts as a result of approved leave taken during the international contract due to incapacity and or leave for occupational industries, disease, paternity and maternity leave. On slide 25, we look at the recruitment and selection of candidates into the scheme and retention into permanent positions within the department. The intention is to retain these candidates in the public service for the medium to long term, and that executive authorities shall ensure that all opportunities for developmental programs within her or his department are advertised in terms of Regulation 65, and the selection shall be in terms of Regulation 67 of the Public Service Regulations. Unsolicited applications for developmental programs may only be accepted under conditions which include the duration of the program does not exceed 6 consecutive months. The applicant submits a verifiable and valid proof that he/she requires a work integrated learning opportunity as part of a recognized learning program, and or for a professional body assessment purposes. And the terms and conditions agreed between the participants and the department is recorded in writing. And then on the completion of the training and orientation components of the graduate recruitment and development program and the expiry of the regulated period of program, the candidates must be exited and retained into another employment capacity. In terms of the duration in the graduate internship program, if it's for requiring experience only, the predetermined time frame should not exceed 24 months. For meeting the statutory requirements of a professional registration, as per the requirements of the relevant body, but not exceeding 48 months. And for structured programs such as departmental graduate recruitment schemes or cadet programs, a period not exceeding 48 months. For the student internship program, predetermined period not exceeding 24 months. Similarly, for a learnership program, which is linked to the qualification, again, for a specific period exceeding 24 months. The apprenticeship program, which is a period specified in apprenticeship registration documents in terms of the Skills Development Act. And there'll be no extensions of the contract except where it is to accommodate leave of absence taken for paternity, adoption, maternity, incapacity, etc., we've already referred to. There is a remuneration guideline on slide 27. Which talks about the entry of exit level from doctoral degrees down to diplomas, higher certificates, etc. And it talks about the percentage of the minimum salary levels, public service salary level, and the maximum stipends amounts which are allowed. On the exit management, slide 28, the head of department may retain a suitable candidate into an entry-level vacant permanent position with due consideration to the department's approved human resource plan. and a vacant entry-level post shall be advertised at least internally within the department to ensure fair, open, and equitable competition amongst existing employees in posts at lower levels and candidates involved in the program. Slides 29 and 30 talk to the monitoring, evaluation, and reporting framework and the role of the DPSA in monitoring the number of schemes established and operating in the public service, the occupational categories the schemes are recruiting in, the number of beneficiaries participating in the program, the rate of retention into the department, the cost of the program, and the accessibility and methods used in communicating the program to the general public. And then the reporting on all graduate recruitment schemes shall be in terms of public service regulations. Particularly related to the human resource development plan. The DPSA on slide 30 will monitor, implement, and it will monitor implementation and compliance of the program on a quarterly and annual basis, evaluate the efficiency, effectiveness, and impact of the program every 3 years. So there will be every 3 year evaluation, looking at how to improve the various plans submitted to the department. The persons on experiential learning should maintain a logbook approved by the institution of learning at which the individual is registered. And persons on developmental programs linked to statutory requirements shall present to the employer the requirements from the relevant professional body. The pre-employment verifications, as prescribed by regulation, must be conducted prior to the appointment of all persons, and departments shall capture and report details of the persons on development programs. Departments shall also use prescribed reporting templates issued by the DPSA. On slide 31, there's an implementation roadmap on moving forward. So that obviously to look at the effectiveness of the provisions, we need to track the initial implementation, and we'll talk to that now in terms of who is partnering and the commitments they've made to date. The envisaged target groups are obviously the graduates meeting minimum requirements for employment into the public service, candidates with potential but do not have minimum requirements for appointment, especially into regulated occupations, and how they are supported to meet the requirements through the necessary programs, which would include candidacy support programs. And then a partnership approach with departments and institutions that employ large numbers of homogenous occupations. They have labor-intensive operations. They require specialized skills and specialist professions. And then they have a mandate to build capacity in the municipalities. Now, we have a number of departments on slide 32 who have shown interest in implementing the graduate recruitment scheme framework. The National Treasury, the KZN Provincial Treasury, Western Cape Provincial Treasury, the National Department of Public Works, KZN Provincial Department of Human Settlements, Mpumalanga COGTA, Mpumalanga Department of Public Works, Northern Cape Provincial Treasury, Mpumalanga Provincial Department of Health, Limpopo Provincial Treasury, South African Police Services, and the Department of Water and Sanitation. We have subsequently had a number of interests expressed, including the administration in Western Cape, who are very keen to work with us around implementation of the scheme. Slides 33 and 34 are instructive because this begins to look at the whole question of uptake. And if we look at the launch of the scheme and its implementation, it gives us a sense of departmental commitment. So as we can see, over two financial years, which is the current one, which is coming to an end, and the planned intake into 2019-20, we have over 300 million rand, which has been committed by the departments that are mentioned here. Which we've already mentioned, and the detailed breakdown of the commitment is given here. Now, these are, in a sense, one could say the numbers are low, but I think we will get greater uptake as we go along, and we work with departments. And there are clearly some important commitments to some of the departments, such as water and sanitation, and obviously the KZN Department of Human Settlements. And those different commitments do also include the building of very, very important critical skills for our development. On slide 35, we point to some of the challenges. These are often budgetary. The compensation ceilings do lead to a squeeze on departments in terms of intake. We obviously need to, not only in this area, but as we've discussed with the committee on other matters, ensure that we build a culture of reporting. The absence of electronic reporting systems and the inability to align this scheme framework with HRD interventions in overall recruitment strategies, as well as the lack of talent development and retention strategies. And then the barriers between the spheres of government, the issue of accommodation and space for absorbing people into developmental programs. Municipalities do have more space, but they also, in many instances, are unable to attract and retain talent. So partnerships will become critical as part of the implementation strategy going forward. And then departments with direct frontline service delivery centers could be better utilized in accommodating persons on developmental programs, because there are challenges in many areas which are the basics, for example, in health patient files. Just to give a sense of comparison of similar programs and the public services budgetary commitments to date, the YES Secretariat has seed funding of 6.3 million. And then ourselves as DPSA, we have available about 800,000 rand per annum to try and coordinate and run this program. And this obviously limits the role which we can play, because I think certainly we would want to play a bigger role. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and Honourable Deputy Minister, that's the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deputy Minister and TC for the presentation. Honourable Members of the presentation. Questions, comments? Honourable Kassim, Honourable Van der Vaart, Honourable Tau, Honourable Nipot, Honourable Tomben, Honourable Honourable Kassim.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just a couple of questions. The first is, what level of how closely does this program work with the Quebec colleges, particularly in the placement of students from Quebec colleges in work-based training opportunities? We've seen over the previous 3 years that the work-based training opportunities available to those students are actually halved in number. That's a very worrying trend. So are we expecting, you know, Quebec colleges to come forward? Is there proactive engagement with them to make sure that students are being placed strategically? The second question is regarding your partners. I see there's a lot of provinces that are missing from the list that perhaps are not taking up will be part of this project. And I've also seen that there's been a huge drop in the number, in the planned intake for the 2019 to 2020 year. Can you maybe just flesh that out a bit more? You tried to speak to it in your presentation. I didn't hear anything about other provinces. So I see, for example, what in Mpumalanga, KZN, different departments of, you know, Mpumalanga, KZN, Western Cape, Limpopo, there are some municipalities that have been mentioned here, but that's by no means all of them. Just to give us an example as to why would other local governments, provincial governments, choose not to be part of this? What are their reasons? Why are even those existing ones reducing the impact? Are there other reasons, as, apart from fiscal conditions, that could be contributing to that? And my last comment, really, is perhaps directed more to the Deputy Minister. When the NDP had identified that there is a shortage of skills in the public service, I think that's the main point here. And this, to some extent, is trying to provide a pipeline in that respect. My worry is, and this is more of a political input, my worry is that, you know, we're not talking about the elephant in the room, which is the policy of care equipment. A lot of South Africans want to contribute to South Africa. Some do not even have a political affiliation, by the way. So it's not about coming from a different political party or having different political affiliations. Many, and those that we engage with at a high education level, want to keep their options open and do not want to. They're not part of branches. They're not actively involve themselves in political activities. And they feel, specifically those that study in fields that are relevant to the public service, many of them feel as if, you know, if they don't have a contact, not connected, they're not going to get deployed. And they're always going to have to work under someone that is going to be deployed. And to what extent can the Deputy Minister tell us how this concern that is shared by South Africans, what is the response to those kinds of things?
Thank you, Christian.
Chair, to add on to that, obviously we welcome this program, but it is, I'm sure, not cast in stone. So we will evaluate this, I would like to know how often, to make sure that if we see hiccups, that we amend. Because you can't have a plan and then hope it works and report. If it doesn't work, we have to amend appropriately. So I was looking at slide 7, and I see from 2014-15 stats, which is concerning if you look at decline. If you look at 2016-17 to 2017-18, for example, in top 10, you have a 12,000 versus a 4,000 figure, and you have a national 13,000 going down to 9,000. And I'm not sure this in ARY. That went to zero. Maybe just an explanation. Then I would also like to know, Chairperson, surely, how are we determining per province or per department what can be accommodated? I'm not sure that I understood quite well. I mean, every department surely has got a budget. And within that budget, there would be space for this. How is that determined? Is it only on the budget? Or are we saying, even if we go outside budget, we will go and find money, which I believe we can't do? And then how will this, I see there's space for advertisements in each department, will whatever. I want to, and I'm not accusing this project on it. I would like to see what an application form looks like. Whether it's online, it's printed, whatever. And my reason for asking this is that I understood that we're going for gender, people with disability, people that were previously disadvantaged, which we should empower and give opportunity. But on the, and it's commonly known across our country, in most of the provinces, not all of them, that, for example, in the EPWP program, people actually have to show party membership when they apply and before they get a job. I want to have a guarantee, Chair. I want a guarantee that I don't have to show my party membership card or my race in this democracy to be allowed internships of any kind. Because that would defeat the purpose completely, because surely this is not a political party program, this is a party for all South Africans. That to me is a concern. And I'm also concerned, Chair, that if you look at the departments that sort of, I don't know, responded as partners, only one province on health, which is Mpumalanga, which we have visited as a committee, not a single education department, which is quite worrisome. And then the DG mentioned, for example, and I take it as an example, that we would like in Mpumalanga, if you get internships where they start up on the filing, you know, which was a mess when we went to Mpumalanga. But I hope that out of a practical point of view, that we do take people, wherever we take them, they get a tour of the whole department. People must know where something comes from, why I'm doing what I'm doing, and what happens with what I'm doing afterwards. Otherwise people won't understand. We try to put people on a chair, and this is what you do. And they don't understand the urgency of doing it correctly, what happens to it after. So that's a very simple, basic foundation that people need to be trained as well. And chairperson, let me leave it at that for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. That's the scary part. Let me leave it there for now. It means you still have more to talk about. Thank you, Chair. Mine is really a comment. I am very, very concerned. I do appreciate what the department is doing with this program. I have all the encouragement that you can have. But you have a fundamental problem. And when I say you, I mean the country, we have a fundamental problem. If you go to your challenges, bullet point two, cuts in compensation budgets leading to reduction of intake. That's the fundamental problem. And the fundamental problem is that, you know, I know, we all know, we're supposed to have a bloated public service. We're trying to cut it down. The minister the other day told the nation she's doing everything she can to reduce the number of people in the public service. She's offering them any retirement, and they're going to have to buy these people out. And that's a good thing. And therein lies our problem. These young people that you're training, trying to train and stuff like that, what do you do with them once you've trained them? Okay? We have lots of vacancies in nursing, and we need nurses. We have lots of vacancies in teaching, and we need teachers. We have loads of vacancies in the police, and we need the police. We can't employ them because we don't have the budget, because the country is not fundamentally creating jobs. So this whole thing that we're talking here about is good, it's welcome, it should be done, but it's going to come to naught as long as the economy grows at 1%, 0.5%, 0%. Just to close up, in 1961, at the end of 1961, I graduated matric at Hofmeyr High School in Atchefu. In February 1962, I was 18. I walked across the street into the municipal offices in Atchefu. They still stand there. As a bookkeeper, employed as a bookkeeper, nobody asked me for qualifications because they knew I came directly from school. No experience was required. Because they knew I came directly from school. Now, why? Because they needed me. They needed this body courses with a matric certificate. Now we have young people with degrees and diplomas, but they can't be taken in because we don't have jobs for them. That's the key. If we can deal with that, then your job is going to be much easier. All these people you are going to be training would be absorbed. But until we make sure that that doesn't happen. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Honorable Tao. Honorable Newport.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Deej, for the presentation. Greetings to all. Starting from slide 6, if you look at the year by year, I'm just wanting to know, in the year 2017-18, it dropped to 29,000, and then 2014-15, it was 43,000. So my question is, what is the reason for the drop in that? And then on slide 8, the last column, 2014 to 2018, the placement, 79,244, and then retention or retained, 3,000, and then I quickly worked it out, that's 4%. So now I'm still not very clear, what is the reason that that small number was the only retention? If there were 79,000 placements, now meeting after meeting after meeting, we get different and various reports from saying that some departments only have 10% or more vacancy rate. Now, my question is, we have the interns, we have the graduates. Can't they be placed? I'm still not clear on the reason why this is not happening. If they have 10% or more vacancy rate, you know, what's happening to these people? And then the breakdown on slide 8. I would like a breakdown. Okay, so you see health, education, social development, and all of those. But now, a more detailed breakdown in terms of what jobs those are, so that we can see those who we call scarce skills, what are those jobs that people are placed in. So my concern, for example, is in 2015-16, the retention in Department of Health was 0%. 0% in, I don't know what happened in 2015, I can't remember, but retention of 0%, being aware that our hospitals and clinics need staff and they're understaffed. So in what fields were those jobs necessary? I hear, you know, the budgets and etc., but we know our medical field, the clinics and the hospitals are understaffed. So what kind of skills are necessary? What kind of jobs would need staff? And then from the placement, the retention is reduced, obviously, so a lot of people leave. Do you do an evaluation from their experience, asking them whether the programs are okay, how can we improve the program, what could we have done better, what could we have trained better, could the supervising, the mentoring be better? Do you get an evaluation from those interns before they leave? And I'm a little bit concerned, I see COCTA there, but on slide 8, with the list of departments, I don't see any local government, and it's concerning because we know local government also needs training, they need artisans, they need internships, but they are not listed there, or is slide 8 just the start of this whole thing? And then the second last question, please indulge me, Chair. If you watch Facebook, people with disabilities, they say they go from learnership to learnership to another learnership, and people with disabilities never get permanently placed. So why should they have these different learnerships instead of focusing on one specialization field, making sure that they can promote and move on? My last question, Chair, we get SMSs. And I like to forward these SMSs, and then later I hear that it was a fake SMS. Now, is there any way that the department can make sure that we don't waste our time and other people's time and transport money and data money, etc.? Is there any way that we can know that this SMS comes officially from our department, our government department, that we can forward to our people, especially with myself, on my groups? Many people with disabilities are there, deaf people who need training, who need employment, they are unemployed, they don't want to live on grants for the rest of their lives. But, you know, before I send something out, or if I do, then I have to say, oh, sorry, it's a fake, isn't it? So can the department maybe find a way to prevent such fake messages from coming through, and that what we do forward is official communication, so that people can send their CVs, get a job or a learnership or an internship, or whatever the case may be. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable. New votes, Honourable Comment.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the report.
colleagues have raised some of the issues that have been raised to others. I will choose my comments to only two comments, a question and a comment. Honorable Kassim spoke about the rollout of implementation partners. And I also see one or two premises that have been left out there. So I was just wondering, why is this based on or is indicated as an interest in the implementation of the GLS framework rather than an obligation? So I'm not getting the impression that the provinces are obligated to implement this. But the report says they haven't shown interest. And that has also to do with the current and the planned projects of the partner partners, which is also based on the interest. That's why it's giving me a one. So I'd like to hear your comments on that. This one is just a comment, Chairperson. I think the issue of this myth, which is actually an over-emphasized myth, conveniently so, about CADA's project, it needs to be addressed and put into a proper perspective. We have been through different levels of employment by the government. And the filling of vacancies and the recruitment is not necessarily based on what is called CADA deployment. And one would understand that any ruling party would have its own way of doing things. For example, I do not think it would work well for any party, like the ANC, to appoint a municipal manager who would not be able to, or who would not want to implement the policy. The thing here is the implementation of policy. I would take a different person from a different political party and expect him or her to implement policies of another party. So this issue of CADA deployment, I think it's overemphasized, and it is just but a myth because it's not like that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Tombelo, Honorable Kosa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and let me appreciate the presentation. Much has been said by my colleague. Maybe one would want to speak to the issue of centralization and decentralization, because fewer provinces have been mentioned here. One would ask us to what happened to those provinces that are not mentioned. What is happening there? I always used to say, Chairperson, I come from very deep rural province, very deep rural areas. It is not easy for me. I agree with this program. I like it, but it is very important for me to see things happening where I am coming from. I don't know as to what advice are you giving me, the presenter, to say you are coming to this type of a very deep rural area. This is what is happening in that particular area, where you're coming from, so that you'll be able to be saying that really these things are happening, things that I'm going to see, not only to see it when I'm on oversight. I'll see them when I'm in the Western Cape, I'm in Gauteng, but I'll also want to see this program taking place in such areas. Because this is what is causing what migration. You know, in 15 years to come, there will be no space for people to stay in some other areas because of migration caused by centralization of all the activities in one area. Lastly, I've noted the challenges in slide 35. I would love the department maybe to come up or tell us what are their plans in place to ensure that they assist with regard to the challenges that they're raising themselves. How do we mitigate such challenges? Because they are there and we don't want them to exist. Something to be done about such challenges. Mm-hmm. One example, you mentioned that there is space in municipalities, just physical space, but not space to accommodate interns and the like. You see, that's what's the problem. But a physical space might be there, but there's nowhere we're in. You'll get interns to be trained in that particular way. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Just as the DG is going to respond to Honourable Lucien's question, I just want on the same slide 8 on retention, understand something. So if we say those were the people placed, those are the ones that we retained for that period. Do we sort of know where the people go afterwards? Do they go to other departments, or are they lost for the public service there in total? I'm not, it's the same retention of matriculants or whatever. What happened to these people? Because surely there's a huge cost to company at the end of the day, and you can argue, of course, that people learn to skill, but do we know what happened to them? Do they use that skill?
Thank you, Honourable.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I will answer some, and my colleague, Mr. Kuzulai, will answer some of the others, and then the DM will sum up. Let me maybe start with the point raised by Honourable Mutau. Okay, when I first got into the department, I did various things in terms of understanding the numbers. And I'm talking now about the wage bill, which you referred to as a key challenge in our current environment. The vacancy rates, I mentioned it in one of the first presentations I made, is going to plateau at 10% or more. And that is because of the compensation ceilings which have been imposed by the National Treasury. And I did say to the DG of the National Treasury at the time that those compensation ceilings are in effect managing the wage bill situation as we currently have it. But it is having an effect on the headcount, and that is reflected in the ability to fill vacancies. And, the art of human resource management at the moment in the public service is understanding the constraints on the compensation budget and how to manage those. And there are departments which would struggle more, and those are departments which rely on critical skills. And the big social service that you mentioned, health, is obviously one in that. So I appreciate that comment, as much as it was made also with a sense of good luck, as you said it. But I think it is a very important piece of background information that we do need to reflect on when we look at these. So it would, for example, also relate to the question or the observation made by Honourable Ntombela about why we're looking at interest rather than obligation. I think that is something we need to think through carefully. Now, the obligation can be through looking at targets, which I believe we should look at targets, and then departments will have to look within their compensation budgets and see how they are going to come up with an approach to meeting the targets. I think that probably would be the best way of obligation. But as we begin and commence with this, we are finding a number of departments have stepped forward with interest, and we are responding to those at the moment. Also with a severe capacity constraint on our side, which we probably need to overcome through closer collaboration with the National School of Government. We're in one ministry, and in areas like this, we are beginning to collaborate maybe better than we have in the past, but I think we need to have strong collaborative relationships with the National School of Government in the implementation of this particular initiative. What I can say on the issue, which I'm sure the Deputy Minister will comment on, is the whole issue around what's being called cadre deployment. Where we operate, and obviously the application forms, they operate within the confines of the law. And that's how we operate from the public service in a professional way. So I don't want to address those kind of issues because we're very clear about what the law is, and it's reflected in the instruments we use, such as the 83 form. But it is also, you know, just in terms of thinking it through. We look at the two biggest economies in the world today, the United States and China. They have political appointments. Top three levels in the United States are all political appointments. They all vacate office, depending on the party that wins the election. So the idea of a political appointment is not necessarily where the problem is. The issue is meritocracy. And I think that is really a value which we need to strive for as South Africans, all of us, is to ensure that we have meritocracy. Because it's driven the success of those two economies in different ways, but both of them do focus on the issue of meritocracy. So I'm endorsing that when we implement programs like this, we are really trying to ensure, as is the case across the entire public service as regulated by the DPSA, that principles of merit apply. In terms of whether the program is cast in stone, I think any program needs to be evaluating based on evidence, which would include the ability, which is very difficult, to track people who've left the public service. It's not easy. It's definitely a correct thing to do. How we track them, how we use exit interviews in terms of helping us understand the effectiveness of programs, all of that is certainly very important. But we would need to tweak the program as we go along to ensure maximum impact. And we would need to have the mechanisms. We've spoken about the way in which we want to conduct monitoring and evaluation on an ongoing basis in the program. And the idea is not to just say, these are the numbers, this is what is extended, is to talk to the qualitative issues, which I think everyone is concerned about in all the questions. There are concerns around quality. maybe the other issue is having a picture of the entire department. Every department is expected to have its own internal induction program in addition to the induction program offered by the National School of Government. So every single department in government must have an induction program which explains the purpose of the department, its legal mandate, its internal policies that govern the functioning of the department, etc. All those matters are matters which form part of a departmental specific induction program, which is a requirement. Yes, interns should go to an internal induction program, certainly. I think on the issue of centralized versus decentralized, it's quite a vexed question. It's vexed because we went for an approach which was highly decentralized, and trying to roll that back is very, very difficult. And it applies to a whole lot of areas of human resource management, not only the one that we're focusing on right now. It would require a fundamental revision of the public service and administration legal and regulatory framework. And there are apparent advantages, there are apparent disadvantages. But the real idea which drove decentralization was to try and get authority and decision making at the point where services happen. That was really the idea which drove it. And obviously there are challenges. There's challenges of basic compliance which militate against decentralization. Because if there's no compliance or inadequate compliance, then we have a legal framework which is not functioning optimally. So we are having in this particular program as well to face the reality of decentralized recruitment as opposed to a more centralized system which was before. It is a British colonial inheritance. The Public Service Commission structures are those kind of inheritances where you have centralized recruitment and selection. The NDP does make some kind of recommendations around the apex of the public service and how there could be a more kind of centralized approach to it in order to ensure professionalism. And it talks to a hybrid model involving the Public Service Commission and the administrative head of the public administration. So those are certainly issues that need to be debated and discussed. But the reality at the moment is that we operate within a decentralized framework which inhibits options which may be there as ideas which may see this program run better, but which prevent us from being in a position to implement it in a decentralized way. I think Mr. Kuzwayo is going to talk to some of the numbers that have been raised in the various questions and clarify that as well as any others as well. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Can
I remember? With regard to the relationship with CEDAW, two things that happened in 2012 particularly. The CSA issued a circular to all departments saying that in our recruitment practices we need to recognize NCV, which is the qualification that comes out of the CEDAW college system, where the minimum requirements for appointment is grade 12 or equivalent. And that we need to take it very clearly that NCV is equivalent and even in the requirement from the adverts, not the recent for departments recognize the CVET college system. The second thing that happened, we were approached by DHET to say that there was a huge backlog on the working to create that opportunity that many of the college students or learners were unable to graduate as a requirement of the design of their qualification before they could set an intention for the exposure of the test program. What we did is the PSA, we facilitated for the placement of those learners within the public sector. When I say public sector, it includes the national province as well as the municipality. So about a total of 35,000% through the intervention. There are not many provinces that are listed in the Highlands space that we can go to that are let's go. What I said was that when we started out with the investigation with the Palace Bay, we ourselves were not sure how this was going to turn out, so we invited departments to come forward, let's develop this together, let's look at what exists, within departments what exists in the private sector within the country, what exists in the public sector outside of South Africa and private sector. And together we formulate what we think is going to work for our situation with all the dimensions that have been mentioned, decentralized HR and vacancies and technical areas that we need to focus into, special professions. And we then came up with the framework, and then we said, thereafter, this is the framework that's been approved by cabinet, then we want to issue it now, but we would like to have those that are ready to kick start so that we can then replicate it to whoever is not ready at that time. So these are the departments that came forward to say, we're ready, because we had some teams that were running. If you report, the members of the committee call that we started out there, that one of the observations that was made by the NDP was that there were some of these problems taking place in some departments, but they were not coordinated. The reporting was not to the extent we would like it to be. And I think one honorable member comes from the rural area. Very few people even know about their scheme taking place. So the idea here is not only just to just have a scheme for the sheer level, but it's to elevate it, to get more advocacy about it, and it's to make sure that it's well communicated and people can, you know, youngsters can hear about it. One of our slides where we put a conceptual framework about what the scheme is and different routes, I think it's slide 20. We're saying there, specifically under the minimum generic element, we've got one activity block under recruitment that talks about what are the recruitment options available. Career fairs, campus visits. And when we're talking about campus, we mean all of campuses. Career fairs. Now, one of the key initiatives has been running on annual basis now, although we don't do it all in online programs, even the remote resources, is the career guidance. There are some of the most recent ones we've held. Of what in Malelane, some of them in, what is this place, if you go, that other side, in Palsma, you know, those kids on the road, they're kind of affected because we're trying to reach out to say, if you want to make a public service a career of choice, let everybody know. So this is what we've been trying to do. So then this department has said, well, they already have authorization from their executive authority that they can run with this project. So then the idea now, those that have been identified is those that have said, we are ready to embrace the framework and adopt it and incorporate our programs into this. So there are others. For an example, yesterday we had a quick meeting with the Department of the Treatment that was going to, because they was called on Monday to say, now they want to take this. In fact, we've got a specific invite. We have a circular that goes to the department, to all departments, to say this framework is now ready, it's been approved, it's running, can we start implementing? And then we have special invites to certain departments that we have led to that we have got teams that are running, to say, can we get together so that they adopt this, so that when others start working, they will have something to benchmark. So the list will increase as we move along. The job?
Who's on?
Yes.
At 11, we must get into a joint meeting with the House people so that the Deputy Minister can conclude the
job. Well, the drop in numbers is a result of budget cuts, and I can say that. 2019, and we can also acknowledge that the capacity within the DPSA also makes it somehow difficult for us to get down to the actual quality these details, but there's a lot of other kind of topics. We have just refined the PESAL system so that we can draw a lot of this data electronically rather than having to do manual reporting. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. A lot of concerns have already been responded to, but indeed with the concern that was raised by Honorable Karim, no case of deployment, but political deployment. So there's no clear deployment, Honorable Kassim, but political deployment in strategic positions that are used by ruling parties to give guidance to their election manifesto. If there is an area where you find that the election process actually is exclusive, it means it's unconstitutional, and I'm sure you know, we always take matters to court. You can actually challenge it in the court of law. So this means it's not really happening. What you're actually expressing. As one of us on the you think that the problem is contentious, and I do agree with you. But there is what we call the revised graduate recruitment program. You know that for now, everything has been put together. And this is why within the same program we talk about internships, leadership, apprenticeship, but there's a revised recruitment program, which is the answer to your concerns. Concerns in terms of why train, not retain, because that revised program actually focuses much more on utilization of the already vacant positions, so that there could be more and more absorption and placement, and I'm sure you make Honorable Mutamu very happy when you look at it from that dimension. Because what we're trying to do is to actually try and move away from too much of training and leaving these people, yes, after training, because that means that it's a waste of government money. And when it comes to policy, in order to allow the whole arrangement of removal of barriers to entry, how we will deal with it will be determinations and directives so that we manage to comply, because only it's important that whatever enthusiasm you have for the implementation of programs for us to continue to comply to public service regulations. We are actually envisaging a situation, especially when it comes to the graduate recruitment program, where the provincial and national government departments will hit to the court. They will become part and parcel of the process that is, we hoping, will be a decentralized program, allowing the government department to actively be involved in recruitment of the graduates. You're actually saying that there is need for evaluation, and I agree with you completely, because here we're actually putting something to test. We're not sure the outcome, but it means along the way, at different points, we'll keep on evaluating so that we can realign it in order for us at the end of the year, yes, to be in a position to achieve the desired goals. One thing that will be important with the graduate program will actually also be indeed career passing, talent management, retention, and of course all of that goes hand in hand with the government, because we sometimes talk about retention and not always attach retention to performance. Because you can't just retain people if they're not actually performing. Because at the end of the day, when we actually deliver public service, it needs to be the kind of service that manages to meet the needs of the people on the ground. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, and your team. And I believe you will make sure that the issues raised by the members are followed up. The issues of skills development and job creation are very critical in successes, more especially among the young people. Unlike Europe is getting old. Africa is becoming more young.
in Europe and Japan and other countries, people are getting older. They are more worried about the pension. Whereas here, we are more worried about creating jobs. That's the fact. It's what we have today. So, to have a youth population, I think it's a plus. I mean, they are vibrant, they can envision the future. So we will have to keep faith of them in the public and in the private sector. Otherwise, they will reach challenge with the energy to other things and are going to regret as a country. So as a responsible partner, let's make sure that we create as much, as many opportunities as possible for skills development, but also job creation. And this department is very, very, very central in monitoring the public service as a whole. It's just that the issue of creating a single public service may be due for another day. I'm not sure where it is. We've been talking about it for many years. You can see where the challenges that municipalities today have. By the time we have a single public service, it will be difficult to integrate that single public service. But every municipality has got its own levels and in terms of salary levels, in terms of grading, and so the sooner the country looks at that, Deputy Minister, we shall see more public service, the better. So that we are able to follow up to the lowest level. People interact more directly with the municipalities and national departments, which are a bit distant from there.
Government closer to the people was the slogan.
Yes. So if we have up until local government level, some of these programs, surely it will make a lot of difference. But thanks very much. We'll make a follow-up to see to it that, as it has been suggested, the monitoring of this program in terms of it being rolled out. Thanks very much, honorable member. Our next item will be briefing by Public Works. I hope the minister and our colleagues from the other people.